Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, it is October 21st when you and I are recording this right now. It's like 95 degrees outside my house. I am not okay with this.
Yeah, man, this ain't no basketball weather.
No, and look, I'm saying this is like a fat guy who sweats a bunch. Like, this is not cool. Like, this is just, it's not comfortable. It's not what, anywho. I wonder if people on the East Coast hear that, how they take that, how they receive that. Probably not all that great. Anywho, reasons to be excited, though. This is the last episode you and I will ever record of the 2019 NBA offseason.
Thank God.
We made it. Everybody listening, pat yourselves on the back. We made it. Oh, man. We are recording this about 23 and a half hours before, 27 and a half hours before the Lakers and Clippers finally tip off. The NBA can't exactly be thrilled about their decision to have the Raptors and Pelicans kick off the official NBA season. The Kawhi Leonard-less Raptors will take on the Zion Williamson-less New Orleans Pelicans. So that's kind of a bummer. But in the game immediately following that, you have, I would imagine, one of the most highly looked forward to games in like NBA recent history, right?
Yeah, but we're hitting the ground running, right, with this, you know, whole Battle of LA thing. I still stand by my whole, like, the Clippers are not rivals until they do something. Mm-hmm. And, like, on paper, this could be a year where that ends up happening. But, like, they got to do something first. But, yeah, like, did you hear there were, like, 400-plus credentials issued for tomorrow's game? It's going to be wild. By comparison, the first game of LeBron's career with the Lakers, there were just over 250. So it's just going to be a madhouse.
That's way too many.
Oh, I'm sure we won't be overreacting regardless of what happens.
Oh, I have a couple tweets in the drafts just in case the Lakers win.
And you got freaking 400 people there working on some version of a story on this. This is going to be the most analyzed regular season game of all time, apparently.
Today's show, we are going to start by and mostly carry the show off of kind of getting everybody ready for this game. I kind of want to talk about stakes. I don't know if we can assign stakes to game one of 82, but I kind of want to talk a little bit about that dynamic that, you know, people are going to talk about as a result of how tomorrow's game goes. I want to talk about some specific matchups that we're going to be looking for. It looks like Rajon Rondo isn't going to be playing. He is dealing with a calf issue. I think Vogel said that Caruso is a go, and Quinn Cook is also a go, though to a lesser extent, because he is also dealing with a calf thing.
Anthony, what did you do to his calf?
Why would I admit that on the podcast?
I just wonder about you sometimes, man.
FIF. In all seriousness, I hate hearing about athlete injuries. Like, you're talking about the way these guys make their livelihoods and stuff like that.
So my apologies for it's a sore calf. I don't think the dude's like injured, yeah. Right? I'm not. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, I don't mean to. You know, be holier than thou on that stuff. I just, especially after that guy from The Athletic kind of mm-hmm. sort of celebrated mm-hmm. AD, you know?
Yeah. Then we get the news about Zion today.
Yeah. So, like, I just don't think that's a road you ever want to go down.
For sure.
But yeah, no, I mean, I look, in terms of just basketball, though, I think that gives the Lakers a better chance at beating the Clippers. And, you know, we're going to analyze that as such as well. And then if we have any time at the end of the show, we are going to talk, or we have a few more questions here to get us caught up and get us everybody ready for the beginning of the season. So plenty of stuff to get to. Let's start with the stakes, because in reality, there are no actual stakes with this game that is, you know, that any more stakes than your usual division game that you play against a divisional opponent.
It is an NBA Twitter playoff game, though.
It is. No, I think everybody's going to have, like, the takes that are going to be fired off one way or the other. Well, especially if the Lakers lose. Like, if the takes that mm-hmm. are going to be fired off if the Lakers lose are going to be hot, right? I'm sitting here. I just finished eating like a bag of Flamin' Hot Cheetos. It's going to be that, like, Hot Ones is going to be seen as like just like a regular salad with ranch on top of it. But if the Lakers win, I'm interested because I do think the Lakers, I think they're now favored. I think they should be. The Clippers are playing without Paul George. The Lakers are playing without Rajon Rondo. I think the Lakers probably should win this game. How do you think it's received if the Lakers win this game? Is it just going to be, oh, it's just a regular season game? Why are you guys all hyped?
I think it's going to depend how they win, right? Yeah. Like, if it's a close game, Lakers win by 4 or 5 points. Like, yeah, Paul George didn't play. And you're going to hear that no matter what.
Yeah.
If the Lakers stomp on them, like, I've been saying this for how long, Anthony? We are so ready to, like, fucking ransack villages and shit, right? Like, as Laker fans, we are pent up. So if the Lakers go out and whoop on these dudes, like, it's going to be a bloodbath. And I'm ready for it. I'll be on the front lines.
By the way, the Clippers haven't played very well in the preseason.
No, they didn't beat an NBA team.
They didn't, and I think they were in the cellar in terms of offensive efficiency. Like,
they were really bad on offense. They were good on defense, but they were really bad on the other end.
Right. So, and look, that was one of the things I've been nervous about. You need primary creators that are not just like, you know, I saw some takes that, you know, actually Kawhi Leonard is better at this stuff than we thought or than people consider him to be. And no, actually the Lakers or the Clippers are going to be okay because Lou Williams can carry the burden of the offense. But like, that's not how basketball goes. Like, you need somebody who considers other people scoring as high a priority or lower or higher on their priority list when they're out there on the basketball court in order for an offense to work at a high level. Yeah. And they don't have that. They don't have a player who does that. So I actually think, and look, we'll get into the specific and individual matchups here in a bit. I think it goes a long way in setting a tone for a soft opening to the season. Otherwise, like, if they start this season with a win against the Clippers, especially if it's, you know, a secure win the way that I think that they probably should win this game, like, I don't see what's stopping them from ripping off like a nice little win streak.
Have you taken a look at their first 20 games recently? Just like after everything that we've seen, let me pull this up because this is it's easy to look at this and be like, So this game against the Clippers is going to be a tough one. Like, I know Paul George is out, but they could definitely lose this game. But so at Clippers, let's say it's a coin flip. I think Lakers are a little bit favored. I think it's probably 60% chance Lakers win this game. Then 3 days later, home against Utah. Good team, right? Mm-hmm. Then from there on out, you got home against the Hornets, home against Memphis,
win
at Dallas,
win
at San Antonio.
Eh.
Tougher, but
yeah,
right, winnable. At Chicago,
win
home against Miami,
win
home against Toronto,
win
at Phoenix.
Just got a double booker.
Right. home against Golden State, home against win. Sacramento, home win. Against Atlanta, home win. Against OKC, at OKC, at Memphis. Like, bro, that's like our first 20 games, man.
Yeah. And
so to me, I see probably 14-6 or 15-5 in that with potential for, like, I see that as like a midpoint. Like, that can be a 17-3 type team. Yeah. If they get off to a hot start. And if LeBron's approach to the preseason is indicative of how he's going to approach the games that count, like, it could be a really, really nice start to the season. God, don't hurt my heart for being optimistic about this. I'm listening to myself and I'm like, have you completely forgotten how last year went? But this is where I'm at right now. I'm at the most optimistic I've been in a long time. Don't fucking break my heart, Lakers. Thank you.
I think there's value to that. Like, enjoy this moment, enjoy this optimism. And then if they break your heart, like, you still had your optimism in the first place. But, you know, I think the chances of them breaking our hearts are significantly lower than they have been since the back-to-back years, like in a decade. Mm-hmm. So we, you know, Laker fans, we got that going for us. Let's take a quick second. When we come back, we'll get into the basketball side of this. We talked about the intangible stuff, the stakes that are tough to define anyway, but I want to talk about the tangible matchup here between two of the league's best teams. So hang tight. We'll get to that here in a second. So fucking pumped. I have not been this excited for not just the season, because the season itself like makes everything around it so much more exciting. It's not, you know, your dad or your grandpa's NBA season. This is an NFL type year that we're all getting ready for, where there are so many teams that think they have legitimate cases to be made for championship type expectations. You have so many teams, like there's like 11 teams or so, 12 teams that could make the playoffs in the West.
When was the last time that this type of year happened in the NBA?
I thought about this the other day. And I can't. I wasn't able to come up with a season in a long time, because even that year the Detroit championship, that's looked at as like the outlier of where you don't need superstars and whatever. But heading into that year, the Lakers had like a super team. People thought that that year was just over because they had Karl Malone, they had Gary Payton, they had Shaq, they had Kobe. Like the Lakers were the heavy favorites. So heavy favorites. I'm so excited. I can't speak. But yeah, I don't know. Have you put thought to that? Because I can't really recall a season like this.
It's the first time in a long time where there hasn't been a super team, right? We had the Golden State Warriors over these last few years. And so maybe 2015 was like that, because now Golden State emerged into being that. Mm-hmm. But at the beginning of that year, that's when LeBron had left Miami to go back mm-hmm. to Cleveland, right? And so at the beginning of that year, we weren't looking at Golden State going, oh, well, there's a dynasty right there.
Right. I think we were awesome. Looking at OKC more in that regard.
Right, as a possibility, but they were they were good, and they were amazing in that preseason. I remember watching them that preseason, just being like, these guys are unbelievable, and they carried it forward. Mm-hmm. But that may be like the most recent one. But then again, you know, this dynastic type of team emerged, and that was their first year. In terms of a year where like a bunch of like really good teams duked it out, So you had the Miami Heatles, right? And then before that, you had the Lakers, the Kobe Powell Lakers with the Big Three, Boston Celtics. I mean, 07 maybe? Because like you had the Spurs, and they were really good, and they're considered this dynasty because they had won in other years, but it wasn't like this amazing collection of talent, right?
Yeah.
They were a really good team. So maybe 2007 is the closest to that, but this is a really unusual
further than
year.
A decade.
Yeah, bro, that's a dozen years.
And also, like, the other thing too is this feels different than those years. Like, the teams that we're talking about are, in my opinion, more talented than that, like, 07 Spurs team, right? Mm. I think even the Heatles, like, the year after the Heatles kind of broke apart, I would say that, you know, I would take these Lakers even against that OKC team, or heading into that year where we didn't know what the Warriors were going to be. These teams that we're talking about, Philly is fascinating. They're like this great retro team that I can't wait to see what that actually looks like. And Milwaukee has this all-time great talent who's coming off an MVP season that ended in disappointment. You have, like, I could go through the entire NBA and I could find storylines that build these teams up to a place that, like, that, yes, they are extremely exciting, but they also have this potentially fatal flaw.
And like Houston, man, like Houston, they could be that team that finally breaks through after losing to the eventual champion for so many years. That's like historically how it works in the NBA, is eventually you like push through,
chip away, and
or they could be a disaster with Russell Westbrook and James Harden, and then that Tillman Fertitta dude that owns them is a freaking mess, and like he's going to take them down at some point. I just don't know if that's this year. So yeah, you've got all these teams where like the best case scenario you can argue for a title, but then there are all these versions of it where it's spectacularly bad. Like it won't be boring. However it works out, it's not going to be boring.
Absolutely. All right, let's talk about the Clippers and Lakers matchup for, by the time you guys are listening to this tonight. Ooh, I just got literal chills. And it's 95 degrees outside. So I want to start with the backcourt. And the reason why I thought Avery Bradley played really, really well in that last game against Golden State, the dress rehearsal game, was because Steph Curry doesn't have the foot, or D'Angelo Russell didn't have the foot speed to take advantage of how aggressively he plays defense on ball. The Clippers don't have anybody in their starting lineup that can do that. Like, Patrick Beverley isn't going to break people's ankles anytime soon, unless he, like, runs into you like the way he did with Russell Westbrook. But, you know, now the caveat there is that I'm a little nervous about Bradley on Lou Williams' minutes, because Lou Williams is very good at drawing fouls.
Boy, that's a good point.
So that makes me nervous. But at least to start the game, it seems like the kind of game that Bradley can at least ease himself into. I want to start there. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, it's a good point. I feel like in some ways, Bradley and Beverly's best talent is kind of wasted on each other. Yeah. Right. And you bring up an excellent point regarding Bradley on Lou Williams. Mm-hmm. That could be something where Lou gets to the line quite a bit due to Bradley's aggression. It's also a revenge game for Avery Bradley, right? He wasn't necessarily thrilled with his time
in that too.
With the Clippers and Clippers fans, there's no love lost for Avery Bradley as well. So those games are always interesting, you know, putting that on top of a season opener that's interesting in the first place. I don't think this is much of an Avery Bradley game, because I do think that his main value is going up against your Lillards, your Stephs, your guards around the league, where even like just his ball pressure, his ability to pick up 94 feet, all of that can just help tire a guy out, even if he's not part of the final five of a close game. He's got value in that respect. Who does he do that to? Like Lou a little bit, but I don't think this is a great game for him. I think it's more of a Quinn Cook type of game. We'll see if Rondo plays. But yeah, Cook is more of the guy that I think that you can have Cook out there and have his defensive issues not be as big of an issue, because the guy across from him is not really that big of a threat, unless it's Lou.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree completely. Let's move over to the wing really quick before we throw to the third segment. I think this is going to be a special LeBron game.
Like a statement?
Absolutely. He was voted as like the third best small forward this year, behind Giannis and Kawhi Leonard. Mm-hmm. And look, I get it. Like, I'm not necessarily disagreeing with GMs, but this is the freshest LeBron has been really at any point of his career. He heard all this noise. He's going up against the guy that a lot of this noise is stemming from. And he's also going against the guy who told him to kick rocks basically this last summer. If there is going to be a statement game, tomorrow is the night to do it. And I think it's well set up for that to play out that way. How do you feel about that?
No, I think that's, if this is the LeBron that I think we're getting, I think that's what it looks like. I'm curious to see who defends Kawhi. I think it's probably going to be Danny Green for most of it. But it'll be interesting to see if LeBron gets any time on him. The Clippers, like, Kawhi's really good, man. Look, like, we got our bitter feelings at him and whatnot. Kawhi's a killer. And if LeBron brings it the way that you're describing, Kawhi is very likely to try to match that.
Yeah.
And we could be in for really one of the great season openers, right? Like the great, you know, clash of titans at the beginning, the old champ versus the new guy that's come, or some say have already taken his crown, right? Mm-hmm. And so just the whole table is set in that respect. I'm curious to see the Clippers' ball movement. I don't want to take too many takeaways from this game, not just because Paul George isn't playing, but Kuzma also isn't playing. Mm-hmm. And with new groups, you evolve so much from November to when we may be seeing them in May or June, you know, that I'm not going to take too much away, but I'm just curious to see, like, where are they starting from in terms of ball movement, in terms of addressing their lack of playmaking? Do they have a prayer of defending Anthony Davis? If so, what does that look like? You know, yeah, maybe that's a good point to move on to the bigs.
Yep.
But yeah, there just so many questions that we're going to have answered at least to some small degree tomorrow.
If LeBron just plays even with Kawhi, I don't see a way that the Clippers win this game. Like if he just,
I mean, Luke could go off, Lou Will could go off.
Yeah. But could,
that's
but,
another thing. Like, go ahead.
No. I was just going to say, like, could Lou go off to the extent that that Anthony Davis could go off against the Clippers front court?
Absolutely not.
Probably not.
Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. Especially, you know, the Lou Williams Montrezl Harrell pick and roll was a devastating weapon for them last year.
Yeah.
I think we're one of the teams that's really uniquely built to defend that with all of the length that we have around the rim. Now it's less so on the perimeter, which is why I think Lou Will would have to go off rather than Harrell having mm-hmm. some monster game around the hoop. Cause we're just not undersized, you know, to where he'd be able to take advantage of that. But like outside of those two, you know, with Lou Will and Kawhi, they don't have a lot in the way of scoring. And I mean, mm-hmm. we say the same thing about the Lakers.
Yeah.
We don't cover the Clippers, you know, for a living, but with Paul George out, I'm curious to see where the scoring comes from.
Yep. And that's what they've kind of slipped up on in the preseason. They haven't been able to score. Mm-hmm. So if that carries over, then yeah, we'll see. Let's take another quick second. When we come back, we'll talk about that front court. And I think this is where the Lakers just flat out can dominate this game. This is, you know, we talked about the statement that LeBron can make, but Anthony Davis has heard all these things too, and he's looked great in the preseason. And I have made the argument a few times over the course of this past offseason and the preseason that it's possible that Anthony Davis is a little underrated. And if he feels that sentiment has gotten a little too loud, a little too annoying, this is the kind of front court that he can really make that noise go away for a little while. So let's hang tight. And when we come back, we'll talk about Anthony Davis possibly putting on a show of his own. So if you were to design a front court to go up against a guy like Anthony Davis, it would look like the opposite of what the Clippers basically have going on, right? You have a slow-footed big guy in Ivica Zubac, and you have a granted athletic but very undersized center in Montrezl Harrell, and not much else. There is not much else that's going to get in the way of Anthony Davis. And I think that's something that if I was a Clipper fan, that's the thing I'd be most nervous about, behind even LeBron, you know, potentially saying, no, I'm the guy still.
Yeah, they need to find a way to combine Zubac and Harrell in some way, like the best attributes of them to have a chance. AD's a guy where on tape, he really eats up those smaller mismatches, right? Mm-hmm. And then Zoo can body him. Zoo actually did a pretty good job on him.
Yeah.
He had a surprise start. Remember, Zoo had that nice stretch in the middle of last year where one of them, it was, you know, Zoo versus AD and Julius Randle, and we didn't really have any other bigs, and it was like, oh God, he's gonna get murdered. And
he played well.
Did all right. Yeah, he played really well. I think that LeBron plus AD really, like, Zoo can hold his own kind of with AD, just because that's the type of guy, those bigger, stronger guys. AD is not as able to be big around the basket, mm-hmm. and his jumper wasn't very good in the preseason. I'm curious to see if that continues into the regular season. The problem that Zoo has is actually guarding LeBron. Now, he's not going to start a possession on him, but in that two-man game, those ball screens, things like that, just put Zoo in space, you know what I mean? Yeah. Put him out on the perimeter and go at him. And so they're going to have to be making, you know, the lesser of two bad choices in that, you know. So this is a game where AD could go for that 30, 35 plus and have a big night. That's something that I really like about Davis, is that he is relentless. And, like, you know, having him on other teams, not watching him every night, you'd be like, sometimes like, wait, he had 47 and 22. And yeah, like, just, he has these video game number type of nights. They're usually against teams that just can't match up with him. And I really like that he will go for the jugular in those circumstances. Mm-hmm. Yes, over and over and over again. I'm hoping tomorrow's one of those nights.
Yeah, I was going to kind of make that point and piggyback off of that point, is that, you know, when Davis notices, sometimes with bigs especially, like Dwight Howard is kind of like this, where Dwight at his peak would have the kind of matchup where he could have 35 points and 20 rebounds, but he would get so bored just dunking time after time after time after time that he would try to do like post moves or whatever and get in the way of his own success. Whereas like Anthony Davis, if there's a way for him to succeed, he has no problem whatsoever. Jokic is like this too. They mm-hmm. have no problem whatsoever just going to that move, going to that matchup time after time after time after time and just ripping your throat out from your juggler. So that's kind of fun to watch or kind of fun to look forward to as well. While you were talking, the player that I think the Clippers are really going to miss in this game specifically, especially because Paul George is out, is going to be Danilo Gallinari. Because so that pick and roll where it was Harrell and Lou Williams, one reason why it was so devastating was that it would take place with Gallinari posted up in the corner, and he was one of the league's like best shooters last year, and that meant that either you had to help off of an open Gallinari corner three, or you had to choose to roll over to or make sure that you tag on Harrell extra hard, and if you didn't do one or the other, then you know you were going to get beat in some way, shape, or form. Yeah. And so Gallinari has been kind of replaced by Mo Harkless, mm-hmm. and he isn't the same kind of threat that Gallinari was from deep. And I think that is a place where the Lakers can really take advantage defensively.
Yeah, they shot really poorly in the preseason, the Clippers did. And, you know, as I'm listening to us discuss this upcoming matchup, I like the Clippers are still very good, right? Uh-huh. Like it's just they have problems of their own that have been undercovered because they are not the Lakers, mm-hmm. right? And they are experiencing the benefit of having one superstar and one, you know, all-star caliber guy and Paul George, the benefit of being seen in a positive light without that extra degree of scrutiny. Mm-hmm. Like the Clippers have some issues and their outside shooting is one of them. Like Patrick Beverley's developed into a solid shooter, especially in the regular season, but look at his playoff numbers. Look at right. what he normally does. Like he's not a shooter. This is something we talk about with Avery Bradley all the time, but for some reason, Patrick Beverley doesn't come Weird. Up. Mo Harkless doesn't come up. Like he's a solid dude, right? Mm-hmm. They've got a lot of solid dudes, but I think they're perceived as being the same team that won 48 games last year, and then they just added these two all-star superstar type guys, yeah. and that's just not the case. And it'll be real curious to see if their skill sets fit. Like I think in some ways their shooting is more questionable than the Lakers is.
Yeah, well, because so the Lakers questionable shooting, it's kind of made up for by the fact that they have such a great primary creator to help get them open. Jared Dudley, I just wrote this article for Silver Screen and Roll. Jared Dudley was able to recall specifically a play where LeBron got the ball to Avery Bradley, and it was a little low, but Bradley, I think Dudley said Bradley was able to go to the extent that he was able to find Spalding on the ball before the defense could rotate uh-huh. over. I thought that was a tremendous quote, and when you have that much time, that makes you a better shooter, whereas if you don't have that kind of a creator, and yeah, like Kawhi Leonard is capable of throwing some of those passes. Paul George, when he's healthy, is capable of throwing some of those passes. But they think about the game in a different way that LeBron does, and that makes it harder on already questionable shooters. And I think that's some of what they've run into here in the preseason. Look, I think when you're talking about narratives about the Clippers, they vastly outstripped expectations because in years past, they have never, ever, ever gotten that guy. They have never convinced a Kawhi Leonard to go there. And right now, they're kind of playing with house money, but they are going to make their way into the season, and people are going to be analyzing them not from the standpoint of prior expectations, but at some point they're going to be analyzed from the standpoint and from the plane of expectations that comes with having Kawhi Leonard and having Paul George on your team and competing against the other league's elite teams. And when that happens, it's going to be interesting to see how well they handle the holes in their roster being picked apart. And I think tomorrow night or tonight, by the time you guys are listening to this, and you guys are listening to me talk. I'm not Mr. Optimistic, but this looks like a real mismatch for the Lakers. And if it plays out that way, I'm interested to see how quickly the media goes from treating them as the darlings that they are to, oh, wait, what do we got to reconsider now at this point, given the way that that just played out?
I'll be surprised if it's much because Paul George is out.
Yeah.
And they're fair or not, right? Like PG is their best shooter on that roster for sure.
Yeah.
In terms of being able to get up a lot of shots at a mm-hmm. high quality rate. But I want to go back to your point about the creation of LeBron and Anthony Davis. Aside from Giannis, who puts more pressure on the front of the rim than either of those guys in the NBA? Is there some, I mean, there may be like maybe Embiid to some degree, but yeah. Embiid doesn't have the same degree of ball handling. Yeah. But he's passing in the conversation because he's so big, right? He's, yeah. And he's really, really skilled. Embiid's really good. But the guys, like we talk about best overall players, but I'm talking about this one little thing, like, can you put pressure on the rim? The thing about LeBron and AD is there's no other duo in the NBA that can put as much pressure on the rim as they do individually, and they're able to put pressure on the rim on the same play.
Right.
Both of them can put pressure on the rim on the same play.
Yeah, that sucks in defense.
The highest level. So that whole thing that Dudley was describing about being able to read Spalding, that's our shooters all year long.
Yeah.
And they just got to be able to make open shots. I do not see the corresponding, you are going to create a great shot every single time because you run this play. Maybe it is that Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell pick and roll again, because the Clippers were great at that again. But, you know, do you do that and have PG and Kawhi spotting up, right? That's, you know, maybe sometimes Kawhi's going to want the ball. Mm-hmm. PG's going to want the ball in these big moments. So I definitely think that the Clippers need to find that before playoff time. And they've got plenty of time to do that. I think the Lakers have that coming right out of the gate.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I think maybe Harrell puts some of that pressure on the front of the rim, but not to the extent, and he doesn't have the passing ability that Davis does.
Well, and like, yeah, and Harrell's one of the great role men in the game. He's also 6'7".
Yeah.
And Anthony Davis is like 6'10", with a, more importantly, like a 7'6" wingspan. And yes, the passing ability, the touch on floaters, things like that, right? Like AD is a monster, and Harrell's really, really good. I've always liked Harrell back to his college days, mm-hmm. but he's just not Anthony Davis, even on a pick and roll.
Yep. All right. So I had a question, and that'll just about do the pre, unless you have any other points to make about matchup specifically.
Yeah.
So we got a question from yesterday's show, and it was specifically for you, but I answered it anyway, but I'm interested in your thoughts on it. And it was basically, I can't find the question, so sorry to the person who asked it, but do you think the Lakers would ever move Kuzma to the two to find him more minutes in this rotation?
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. I guess my question would be, what does it mean to move somebody to the two? In certain ways, you can do that. So specifically, I think about their stagger screens, where you've got two guys setting a screen for a shooter coming out of the corner. I think that's something that if Kuz can shoot, like Kuz has some shooting on the move laterally type of, and that's something that we don't talk about a lot, but that is a big distinction for a shooter, is can you go from going side to side at a decent rate of speed to getting on balance and then going up straight for a shot. Mm-hmm. Kuz shot like crap on like all types of shots last year, yeah. But 2 years ago, he was a guy who could do that, who mm-hmm. could go from being on the move from sideline to sideline, square up, on balance, bucket. He can also curl off of that. He can also play make off of that. So in certain sets and certain plays, even on split cuts, you throw a post entry pass into, say, LeBron or AD, and then you've got a split cut with two guys. Kuz can do that, right? Defensively, I think saying that Kuz is playing the two on offense, but it's Danny Green that's filling that role on defense. Yeah, I think you can get away with that, right? In some bigger lineups where you still got JaVale in the game. But I think it's going to be matchup dependent, but I don't think it's crazy. I do think there are certain circumstances where you can do that.
Yeah, my answer was basically that I think it's something they could do, but I would rather they hold off on that until he feels comfortable in his primary role on this team.
That's a good point.
You know, like, just let him, because I think this really messed with him last season, where he was asked to be a small ball five some, and then he was asked to move up to the two some, and then he was asked to play small forward and power forward, and he was moved all over the place, and I never thought he got very comfortable in his primary role. I don't even know if he figured out what his primary role was. I think this year the focus should be figure out what your primary focus is going to be on this team, and then build outward from there. And that's kind of how, like, the Spurs did that with Kawhi. Start with one very specific, very important task, just spacing the floor from the corner or whatever, and then you're allowed to take one dribble, and you're allowed to take two dribbles, and you kind of build your game from there. I hope the Lakers take that same kind of approach here with Kuz.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point.
All right. That'll do it for the off-seasons portion of the Locked On Lakers podcast. The next time that you hear from Pete and me, we will either be celebrating a Lakers win. We're probably going to record right after the game tomorrow, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're either going to hear us be super happy, and I'll have a happy margarita in my hand, or you will hear me dismissive of all the criticism that comes from the game, because the Lakers are going to take a bunch of criticism if they lose, and the Clippers wouldn't. So either way, I'm just happy to have basketball back.
Amen to that.
Amen. All right. Have a great rest of your day, everybody. Make somebody else's. We'll talk to you tomorrow.